Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Does Golden State beat the 95-96 Bulls, which won 72 games?
I don't think it would be particularly close, honestly. There's no doubt in my mind Golden State beats them in 5 or 6. It would not go 7.
Welcome to the Jim Rome Podcast. What's cracking? What's up? You're rolling on episode 15, and my guest this week is Houston Rockets GM Daryl Morey, one of the most interesting executives in all of pro sports. He's not just the father of basketball analytics, he is also one of the NBA's winningest GMs. And in the middle of a very chaotic Monday, he shut the door to his office, and he carved out some quality time to lend to this podcast. Now, I could have talked to Morey about anything at all, but right now, there's no one thing that's more important to him than running down Golden State. The Warriors are an all-time great team, we know that. You'll hear how great he thinks they are in a few minutes. But beating them right now is why H-Town shoved all their chips to the middle and came out of this offseason with a future Hall of Famer in Chris Paul. That's the kind of move that Daryl Morey's known for. Because before it was Paul, it was the beard, a third wheel that he ripped out of OKC back in 2012 and turned into one of the NBA's best leading men from the moment he threw on that Rockets gamer. So, if you're wondering how close the Rockets are to running down Golden State, you're about to find out. Pot Up, episode 15, starts after a word from Omaha Steaks. Listen, are you struggling to find the perfect gift for somebody who has it all? I've got the answer for you. It's Omaha Steaks. Every single time I've given Omaha Steaks as a gift, I've been a legend. Every time I've received Omaha Steaks as a gift, I have felt like a legend. It is a can't miss. I love this product. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for only $49.99, you can get my family gift pack where you go to omahasteaks.com and you enter my code name Rome in the search bar. That'll get you 75% off. Omaha Steaks offers unique gifts for gourmet food lovers. And right now, Omaha Steaks is giving an exclusive savings just to you clones. Listen to everything that you will get for less than $50. Check this out. 2 filet mignons, 2 top sirloins, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 boneless chicken breasts, 4 kielbasa sausages, 4 burgers, 4 potatoes au gratin, 4 caramel apple tartlets, 1 Omaha steak seasoning packet, and 4 additional kielbasa sausages for free. To get this incredible offer, go to omahasteaks.com and enter my code Rome in the search bar and get a 75% savings. It is a gift that is guaranteed to be a hit. Omaha Steaks. Listen, I never thought that we would have a streak going of passable, playable voicemails, but here we are. We're looking to make it 3 episodes in a row now of semi-decent messages that I don't feel completely ashamed to play. But before I do that, you need to do this. Write these digits down. 949-385-0447. 949-385-0447. That's how you get on this machine. That's how you get played back on this podcast. That line is open 24/7, and you can hit on whatever you want, whenever you want. So dial it up, make the voicemails better. Because even though we are trending in the right direction, I know you can do better than this.
You have 10 new messages. First new message.
Rome, Orion, and Waterford. I'm watching the Brian Fogel documentary, Icarus. Man, this is a trip. It's like the cops explaining the best way to break the law. It's just a trip, bro. Late.
Message saved. Next message.
Romy, Josh and D.
Message deleted. Next message.
Rome, it's Luke in Fort Collins here. I've got to admit, the world of sports has never been as interesting to me as the world of organized crime. I'm a big Sopranos fan, big fan of The Godfather, and your interview with Michael Franzese is just amazing. It's informative, it's eye-opening, and it's inspiring also. Thanks for making that happen.
Message saved. Next message.
This is Dave in Denver. I'm a huge Ohio State fan, and Jim Harbaugh is going to have to change his name to Jim Harbich. He's overpaid. He's overrated. He's overmatched in the Big Ten.
Message saved. Next message.
Hey, what's up, Romy? I know it's walking the thin line of blasphemy to rip the Packers and their fat fans. It's going to be a tough and sad Thanksgiving for those fat, nasty Packer fans. Let's go!
Message deleted. Next message.
Yeah, what up, Rome? Did you watch that CFL Classic yesterday, man? Sorry there, Hoosers versus the... Ooh, get it there, Gordos! They got a big win, man. The get it there, Gordos eked it out by a field goal. Just kidding, man. We don't even watch that shit up here. Warsh and I, 63-year-old plastic grill. Ooh!
Message deleted. Next message.
That was a very valiant effort, Packers, for y'all to go into Pittsburgh and nearly knock them off and not get blown out. Y'all picked off Rottenberger two times, and y'all damn near beat them. To any morons who don't vote for Baker Mayfield for the Heisman Trophy, y'all stupid idiots. So what? He grabbed his junk.
Message saved. Next message.
Jim, I'm calling concerning John Curry at Tennessee. Hope he makes better decisions than he made at Kansas State when he ran off Frank Martin. You know what Frank Martin's done at South Carolina. So good luck, John Curry. I don't believe he's going to make it there.
Message saved. Next message.
This is Dave in Tennessee. Michael Franzese, Jesus H. Christ. I had chills listening to that interview. I could not believe the things that were coming out of that guy's mouth. Oh, my God. Jim Rome, you, not this one. Out of the park, and that park, my friend, was Yellowstone.
Message saved. Next message.
Jim Rome, Kevin Bieksa here. That's two for me.
Message deleted. You have no more messages.
I'll tell you what, we're on a hot streak. We are on a hot streak. And by a hot streak, I mean that was not the worst segment ever. But damn, so much to like about it. How about another fire call from Josh in Detroit? Hey, Josh, if Patisar is never making it on the podcast, then you, Josh, might need to only live in the podcast voicemails. And then you got Dave in Denver glossing Jim Harbaugh, hard bitch. Nicely done, Dave. Not really. How about that guy taking a run at Shania Twain's halftime performance? I mean, she came in on a dog sled into a snowstorm and brought the house down at the Grey Cup. What more do you want from her? Keep it up. Keep it up. At least until I figure out if I've dropped my standards or if y'all are actually improving. Tune in next week to see if we bring this thing back yet again. Angular, cassis, opulent. If you're not familiar with those wine terms, congratulations, you are just like me. See, I don't care if wine clubs and critics babble on about herbaceousness. I just want to know, does it taste good? Luckily, I found First Leaf, the only wine club that's based on your tastes. I just received my First Leaf order, and there are some damn good wines here. Here's how this works. Customize your First Leaf order by selecting the color, wine regions, and frequency of your wine shipments. First Leaf then creates an introductory 3-pack of wine to get you started. With First Leaf's introductory pack, you'll get 3 for only $5 each. Normally, these bottles of wine go for $20 each, if not more. First Leaf is my new favorite way to rate and buy quality wine. To order your 3-pack of introductory wine for $15, go to tryfirstleaf.com/Rome. That's 3 bottles of wine for only $15 at tryfirstleaf.com/Rome. Experience First Leaf today at tryfirstleaf.com/Rome. Daryl Morey was a sports-obsessed student at Northwestern when he sent letters to dozens of pro sports franchises hoping to land a job, any job at all with any team, but nobody bit. So he set out to do what he thought he needed to do to get into pro sports, get rich enough to buy his own team. But that didn't pan out because when he took a consulting gig that paid its bonuses in dot-com era stocks, his check went right up in smoke like the market did. But his work at that time caught the eye of a client that ended up buying the Celtics, and they took Morey along with them. And from there, he has never looked back. And a decade and a half later, while he doesn't own a team, he is one of the best franchise builders in all of sports, and the Rockets have the best record in the West right now. Now, I've had the chance to interview Daryl a handful of times on my radio program, but bringing him in for the podcast gave us more time to dig in. And in the next 20 minutes, you're going to hear his thoughts on last year's botched MVP vote, his prediction on who'd win a series between the 95 Bulls and the 2017 Warriors, and why he thinks that adding CP3 could put the Rockets over the top this season.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been too long.
Gerald, it's great to have you here. Saturday night against the Knicks was just the second time this season that your team has been at full strength. I know it's still early, but this is pretty much what you thought you were getting when you put it all together. So how did it all look to you on Saturday night?
I mean, we started slow, but I mean, overall, since Chris has come back, and I think we've had four games with him, I mean, we're thrilled. It's working. It's early days, but it's been better than we expected at this point. We got a lot of guys playing at a high level.
Now, you had a top 10 offensive team of all time last year. So what's the expectation when you add Chris Paul? I mean, top five all time, best offense ever, perhaps?
We're shooting for best offense ever. I think we're a little short of that because we're number two so far this year. I think Golden State's got us by a little bit so far, but it's quite close. I mean, our goal is to close the gap with Golden State this offseason. And, you know, obviously they're the class of the league, winning two out of the last three titles, but we do feel like we're within range of them. And we've got to prove it on the court. We already beat them once, but we need to keep proving it every night.
So where do you think you're at right now? I mean, there's a lot of basketball still to be played. Clearly you have closed the gap between yourself and Golden State. Have you done enough? And as you're currently constructed, can you see beating them four times in seven games?
I can, yeah. I mean, obviously we have to show it, but we do feel like this group, you know, if we're playing our best, can give them a series for sure.
Right. Now, you felt that James Harden should have been the league MVP last year. Watching him so far this season, is he even better now than he was then?
He's better. That's the thing that is shocking to us. Like, I don't know how he does it, but he continues to add elements to his game. Like, he's made a couple passes the last two games that he just has never made before. And, you know, he's multiple actions ahead of everyone else on the floor right now. It's amazing to watch, and you know, his teammates are obviously helping that as well, always being in the right spots, always contributing at a high level.
Then you go back to last season, you had a bit of an issue with Russell Westbrook winning the MVP over Harden. In your opinion, what should the voting criteria be for MVP?
Yeah, I think pretty basic. I actually think the media has gotten it right generally in the past. I mean, it's always been a player that was on a contender and one that was highly productive. And they've deviated from that a couple times in the past, maybe three or four in 50 years. And last year was one of those. But, you know, I think, you know, that it'll be comfortably back to that normally. And right now, I think James is obviously, you know, out front in that race.
So what do you think happened last year? Why do you think the media got it wrong last year? Why was last year the anomaly?
I just think, I mean, to be fair, it was, you know, it was sort of, there was some branding around a historic accomplishment. You know, if others had branded, you know, better, you know, that James, you know, whoever leads in the most points either scored or through assists, then James would have won. But there was good branding around triple-doubles, so that branding won over anything else.
Now, obviously, yeah, both James Harden and Chris Paul, and you've got two guys, Daryl, that are used to dominating the ball. So the entire world wanted to know, would they share the ball? Could they coexist? And in one sense, superstars join forces all the time, but not Hall of Fame point guards. So why did you think it would all work?
Well, again, I have a great coach. I mean, Coach D'Antoni is unbelievable in his understanding of the game, and we spoke a long time, obviously, before, you know, we really put all our efforts into getting Chris here, and you know, he felt very confident it would work. We felt confident it would work, but everyone needed to feel like it was going to work, both myself and Coach D'Antoni and James Harden. And when we talked about it, we felt very strong that it could work. I mean, the reality is, we also had a great coach in Coach McHale here, and, you know, he played with multiple Hall of Famers, and he always told me, Look, if you play with a bunch of guys who really understand the game and are smart, it actually gets a lot easier. You don't actually have to worry about who has the ball too much and things like that. Basically, you make the right play every time. And if you got smart players who are talented making the right play every time, it's not hard for it to all work. And that's what we have so far.
Yeah, it seems to me also that it's one thing to say that because you need more than one star to win. You need two stars, maybe even three. But for James Harden to say something like that, to express Chris Paul coming in, I think says a lot about him because they do play the same position. If for whatever reason, Daryl, James Harden expressed concerns or had any serious reservations about Chris Paul coming in, would you have still done that deal?
No, I don't think so, because the reality is if you don't have your stars and really most of your team all understanding the direction you're going, all understanding the system you're trying to run, I mean, it really just doesn't work. And so the reason I knew he would be for it, though, is James is just about winning. He really, and he understands the game so much. And he knew when we were going against Golden State, we were outgunned. We had a great team last year, and we've had great teams in the past against Golden State. But we were outgunned, frankly. And he knew that, you know, getting a weapon like Chris Paul here would give us a much better chance to beat them. The reality was last year in the playoffs, we got knocked out in the second round, and a lot of it was every play teams figured out, just make James do everything. And so they were guarding everyone else on the floor, and the strategy was to completely wear James out by making him be the one who had to initiate the offense every single time over and over and over. And there's only been, I think, two times in the last 30 years that a team without two all-pro level, meaning top 15 in the league teams, won the title. It's extremely hard. So he knew he needed a player of Chris's caliber here, and he knew it would work because he had played with them before.
All right, so he needed the help. Now, what about Chris Paul? For instance, you've got to make sure that, I mean, that's different for him, too. He's used to being the guy. He's used to dominating the basketball. And you had to know from him that he also bought in entirely. So what did it tell you that he wanted to come to Houston? And what was his mindset when you first started talking to him?
When we first started talking, I mean, he's at that stage in his career just like James where it's all about getting the championship. So he looked at, you know, obviously, you know, he's a smart guy. So he looked at all of his 30 options. Obviously had a strong option in the Clippers. But he felt like that group, you know, with him and, you know, obviously his good running mates there, you know, really probably couldn't compete with Golden State. And he really felt like we were the group that could when he looked at all the options out there. And so it was pretty simple in that. So in many ways, our roster and the fact that James was embracing him and he had played with James before really, really sold itself. And I would say the time I knew that we had made a great choice in Chris. All 30 teams would have taken him, but, you know, we chased him hard, you know, relative to any other opportunities that were out there, is when he got hurt in game, he got hurt after the first game of the season and was out for that stretch. You know, I've had players in the past that if the team's doing well when they're out, they're actually upset because, you know, it sort of implies like, hey, maybe I'm not needed. Chris was the most excited I've ever seen of any player because we were playing well with him out. And he was just excited for the team. And then, you know, he was talking to me like, I hope I don't mess up the vibe. I hope maybe I should come off the bench. I mean, he was very much like, I want to make sure when I come back, I just help you guys roll. You know, I told him, of course, look, you do not need to worry about that. You know, you're going to take us to yet another level. And I think you've seen that since he's come back. We haven't lost a game, and I think we've won by an average of 15 to 20. So, I think it's going fine so far.
Yeah, I'd say so. Daryl, so where do you come out on that? For instance, when he comes back, you know, we haven't really seen a lot because he was hurt. We haven't seen a lot of he and James Harden together. So what's your sense? I mean, do you want these guys playing together, or would you rather have one spell the other consistently? How do you use the two of them? Because the fact is, most teams never have a Hall of Fame point guard, and you've got two.
I know. Yeah, Coach is managing it real well, obviously, with a lot of conversation with James and Chris. And, They play together about 20 minutes a game, and then they play apart, I think, about 15. I think that's how he's got it arranged, and it's obviously working well. You know, always having a Hall of Fame point guard is, you know, not so, you know, let alone having one. I think teams really, it's, I don't know, like, I don't, if I was facing us, I wouldn't know what to do, honestly. We get a high-level shot every time down, basically.
You get a high-level shot, and you're shooting threes at a historic rate, obviously, right now. So how many of your shots would you like to see beyond the arc? I mean, is it 50% or maybe even more than that?
Yeah, it really comes down to how we're guarded. So you can really tell how we were guarded that night based on how many threes we shot and how well we shot on two-pointers. Because, you know, if we didn't shoot a lot of threes, usually that means we're going to have a really high percentage from two and probably go to the line a decent amount because they're really guarding the perimeter tight. If you see a lot of threes, that means they've packed the paint and tried to take away, driving lanes for Chris and James and Eric. So you can usually just stare at our box score and, if you hadn't watched the game, know pretty quickly how the team guarded us. And I know it sounds cliche, but we're literally just taking the best shot down each time, whatever the defense is going to give us.
So, let me go back to Golden State for a minute, because it's always about Golden State, right? I mean, some pundits, smart ones even, thought the teams might literally sit out Golden State's run and maybe play for 2 or 3 years from now. But the opposite turned out to be true, right? The offseason, teams went nuts. With so many teams pushing their chips to the middle, why do you think that this NBA offseason was so crazy? And should we expect more of the same next year? Is this the new normal?
I think as long as you have a team as elite as Golden State, who's arguably the best team in NBA history. I mean, I think Coach D'Antoni and I talk about it. I think for sure they're the best team in NBA history, meaning like if you take this Golden State team and have them play any team in any era, they'll win. In my mind, that's unquestionable. Now, relative to era, I think, and accomplishments, I think you can definitely argue for other teams. But in terms of just winning a game, they would destroy any team from the 90s, 80s, any era you want to pick. So they're obviously a really, really a tough team to go at. And I apologize, I forgot your question, Jim.
So what
were you asking me? I preambled it. Forgot what you're asking me.
No, because I think maybe both of us got caught up in what you just said. As an example, so, I mean, they're the best team ever. For instance, does Golden State beat the 95-96 Bulls, which won 72 games 4 out of 7 times? I mean, do they beat Jordan's Bulls? Do they beat Magic's Lakers? Do they beat all those teams?
I don't think it would be particularly close, honestly. To be fair to those teams, somewhat you're playing under different rules in terms of the legal defense rules and things like that. But if you take the current set of rules and the current team and you take the in-prime teams from the 90s, 80s, there's no doubt in my mind Golden State beats them in 5 or 6. It would not go 7.
So they beat Michael, Scotty, the Worm, Horace Grant. They not only beat that Bulls team, they beat them in 5 or 6. Like, what's the biggest difference between them and Chicago? What makes them that much better?
I think it's a lot of it's just knowledge on use of the three-pointer, spreading the floor, attacking the basket, and modern NBA defenses. I think now if you were to take that team from the 90s, bring them to 2017 in their prime, allow them to be coached by one of the better current NBA coaches for a few months or a few weeks at least to get them up to speed on the latest approaches on how to play the game. Now you're talking about, I think, a very close game.
What about your Rockets team this year? Do you think they're in the same class as those mid-90s Bulls teams?
No, not yet. I mean, before you can talk about being close to any of those teams, I think you have to have won something, and we're still trying to do that. So, no, I think we're not in that class at all. But Golden State has won 2 of our last 3 titles. I think you can start to say they're on the, you know, at or ahead of those other teams.
Yeah, Daryl, you should look around the league because this is what's going on right now because you've got that one goal that people are taking or aiming towards. A number of teams, as we mentioned, did take big swings this offseason. As an example, you've got OKC, and they've got their trifecta now of Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, and Russell Westbrook. How does that grouping or that pairing look to you thus far?
Oh, yeah, so I'll go back to your earlier question, and now I'm remembering. So you asked about, is that the new normal on free agency being crazy? So, yeah, if you have it, my point was going to be, if you have a team that elite as Golden State, it does force teams to choose. Most teams who are somewhere in the middle or near the top, like we are, definitely is choosing, okay, we've got to close the gap somehow. And Oklahoma City was there as well, to your question right now. You know, you can't fool yourself. Golden State is so good. You can't, like, say, oh, I'll win 56 games and I'll hope to beat Golden State in a seven-game series. It's not going to happen. I mean, you need to be at least in the high 50s, if not in the 60-win range, in terms of the quality of your team to have any shot at beating Golden State in a seven-game series. And you do need multiple stars. There's no single star team is going to beat them. So it does force teams to choose. It does force teams to clarify where they're at. And so I do think while you have a team as elite as Golden State, you're going to have very, very, very active off seasons. Yeah.
All right. So speaking of OKC specifically, then, how do they look to you right now? Paul George, Carmelo Anthony, and Russell Westbrook. How do the pieces look to you, and do they fit well?
Well, they're going through an adjustment period, which I think is normal. I mean, I expect them to be at the top of the West at the end of the year. They have a great coaching staff and great players. So, you know, I think when we first have brought in, you know, top-level players in the past, there's always a little bit of a bumpy road. And, you know, we'll definitely face some hard times this year. We just haven't hit them yet. So, but for sure, there's going to be a period where we're having to adjust to what's going on.
Now, Doug, you get so much credit, and deservedly so, for being out in front of the analytics movement. But let me ask you this. I mean, obviously, you want to use data, and you want to use the best data to make decisions, but there's more to it than just that. As an example, Danny Ainge got a lot of heat for dealing Isaiah Thomas after all he did for Boston and what he went through with his own personal tragedy when his sister passed. So my question is, how hard is it to do the right business thing when there are people and there are strong relationships involved?
Well, I think when you're a team that's, you know, where we're at, which is trying to contend for the title, I think it gets easier. There's less turnover. There's less movement. I think the Celtics situation was pretty unique in that they're still in the last stages of their turning the franchise around there, even from not even a down period, but just from a non-contending to, you know, a very clear contention situation now. So it's rare that you have turnover like that. When you're a team like ours, you're not going to see a ton of turnover. I think it gets harder. The business gets a lot harder when you're in either a rebuilding phase or even in a phase where you're just one of the mid-tier teams. That's when it gets real tough. Because you do have to generally make more moves. You got more player movement, things like that.
What comes to mind, Daryl, when you look at the way the Houston Astros roster was constructed and the way they play? Because I know you pay attention to that, too.
Yeah, no, Jeff Luhnow is one of the best, if not best, in baseball. I think him and Andrew Friedman who's the Dodgers GM, are unbelievable. And, you know, he obviously went through a very strong rebuilding phase. I think they lost the most games ever. And, you know, our former assistant GM went through a very similar process. I wish he had been able to finish it in Philly, but a lot of those fruits are bearing now up there. So I do think the way the rules are constructed in the NBA, even more than baseball, having a period where you're really down in an extreme way actually has a huge advantage.
Darren, one bonus question really quickly. I know your social media game is very strong. In terms of Twitter, are you team 280 or team 140?
I'm team 140. I mean, I'll go to 280 because I don't like having multiple tweet storms. So I guess I appreciate that. But I think the whole point was to have a brief, you know, force people to be concise. And so I'm more team 140.
Ferguson is the nation's largest distributor of plumbing products, but their playbook goes much deeper than just plumbing. Pros know to depend on Ferguson for the very best in waterworks, HVAC, commercial mechanical, builder, and facilities maintenance products and solutions. Ferguson has over 20,000 knowledgeable associates, and they're always working for you. You combine that with Ferguson's 1,400 locations and 24/7 online ordering, and you will always have the home team advantage. See why the pros pick Ferguson at Ferguson.com today. That's Ferguson.com. All right, so this week I'm going to change up on you a little bit. I am bringing in Adam Hawk. He is the EP of the Jim Rome radio program. So, Adam, you and I both know. First of all, Sparrow, what's up?
Hey, how are you, Jim?
Good, man, good. You and I both know, and it was something of a shock, but there are people listening that don't even know that we have a daily radio program and only know about it because I talk about it on the podcast. So for those of you who do not know, Adam Hawk is the EP, the executive producer of our daily radio program. He's very involved in this podcast, and he's been with me now, what, a little over a year?
Yeah, like 13 months.
All right, so you've been in this business, you've worked at other shows, other networks, for other hosts. Is it what you thought it would be? Let's let them inside the curtain a little bit. And again, I'm talking to a lot of our clones or our radio listeners. Tell me about the first year. Is it what you thought it would be?
You know, honestly, it's been so much more. And I'm not just placating. Like, this is an insane gig for a guy like me.
Placating, your ass is fired. All right, man, keep it real here.
Yeah, and totally keeping it real. This is, it's the mecca of sports talk radio to be working for you and be working for the Jim Rome Show. And I know everyone listening can agree with that because they participate at such a feverish rate every single day. There's a library that Alvin pulls from that's got like 30 years of sound bites. There's constant resets. There's interaction that's just off the charts. So it's way more than I thought it was going to be, especially since I had done this gig for like four other radio hosts. And then I get here, and honestly, it was like I knew nothing when I got here. I thought I knew so much. It's like that guy who kills it in high school basketball, then he gets to college, and everyone else killed it in high school basketball, and you're no longer like the dude. You got to learn.
What's incredible about that? You and I have the same reaction. Like, when you came here, I thought you knew so much, and then when you got here, I realized you knew nothing.
Yeah, this is...
So you and I are on the same page.
Yeah. So this is just an incredible place, and I had to learn a lot really quickly, but I really do feel like I have learned a lot. And in the 1 year that I've been here, I've learned more than in my eight previous years in radio. And that's just simply a testament to what this show is. It's gigantic. It's a show in which when you say something, people hear it, people react to it. And as a producer, you got to...
People are turning off their phones right now. We're losing people, all right? So let's stay on point right here.
Sure.
Adam Hawk. You see, that's the radio host in me resetting who I'm talking to, but I don't need to do that because we're doing the podcast. Let me ask you this.
Yep.
All right, so you've probably had some great days and probably some not so great days. What has been, what's the worst part of this gig? What's the toughest part and the worst part?
Yeah, hands down.
Let's keep it negative for a minute.
Yeah, sure. Hands down, Twitter's been the worst part. I came in with like 27 followers, and once I put at Jim Rome's producer in my bio, it went to like 2,500 in a couple months. And people expect, since
I work... But not because you're good or sharp or insightful,
no,
right?
No, I suck at Twitter. And now when I suck at Twitter, people are all over me for it. So, you know, people think because I'm associated with you that I have got like fire takes and like I'm super smart when it comes to sports and I know exactly what to say at the right time the way you do when you're watching a game. I would much rather
tweet... Bro, you're none of the above.
None of the above. I would much rather tweet about Hot Pockets or cats because that's funny to me, except every time I do it now, I sit there for like 45 minutes thinking about it.
But it's not funny to anybody else, bro.
I know, but I gotta be me unapologetically. And the thing is, Jim, I sit over tweets for like 30 minutes now, just like looking for typos, looking for grammar errors, because your audience is so amazing at being on top of everything. They don't let you get away with anything. And like, I could tweet, the sky is blue, and they'd be like, fire take, Sparrow. We'll see you in the studio tomorrow, you stupid idiot. You know, does Jim know you're doing this right now? Or my wife just made me dinner. It was delicious. You're an idiot, Sparrow. See you in the studio tomorrow. So Twitter sucks for me right now because I can't do anything on Twitter. But
you
yeah,
can't win. You can't win.
I can't win. And then again, on social
they
media.
They ripped the joy from you. You love Twitter when you had 25 followers.
And now 2,500. Yes.
And now you have 2,500, which would be a dream for anybody else.
Right.
And it's the worst thing that ever happened.
Yeah. And also, speaking of social media, LinkedIn is weird now, too, because I changed my LinkedIn to the Jim Rome producer. And that notified a bunch of people that I don't know that are in like networks of networks, like these guys that do Division III play-by-play for college basketball schools I've never heard of. And they're like, hey, man, if I'm ever in LA, can we get lunch? Like, it would be great to network with you. And I don't know these guys, and I'm not against networking, and I'm not a big shot or anything, but I know what they want, and they just want to get to you. So that's an interesting thing. It's like I was an anonymous nobody until I got here, And because of you and having your name attached to my LinkedIn and my Twitter, there's all these people I don't know who want a piece because they want to get to you.
I see it working. If it'll make you feel better, LinkedIn this morning alerted me and they figured that I wanted this information and I need this information. They let me know that there's like an assistant sales position at Toys R Us.
Now,
and they gave that to me. So if it'll make you feel any better, they're messing with me like they're messing with you.
Right. And what would be funny is if you showed up for that interview. And someone knew who you
See,
were, and you
problem.
Just crushed
this
and they hired
This is our problem,
you.
Hawk. That's not funny. That's not funny to anybody at all.
I know.
This is why you may not be long for this gig, because you think shit's funny when it's not.
That is
all
true.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. You have one of the toughest gigs of all, and it's not being on Twitter. It's screening the calls. And I mean this sincerely. Not only do you have to go through 50, 60 terrible calls to get a bad call on the air, it's a really important job, because you have to be sure you're the gatekeeper. You're the one who decides who gets on the air and who doesn't. What's it been like to screen the calls? And how does it compare to screening other calls on other shows?
Okay.
No names mentioned.
Right. Okay. So first off, the phone actually rings, which is a surprise. On a lot of radio shows I worked on, the phone didn't ring. It's tough. People don't want to interact, but people love being a part of this show. So the phone's constantly ringing. The second thing is, like you said, being the gatekeeper is a huge responsibility. You put on a terrible phone call, which I've done before. It looks bad on me.
Lots of times.
Lots of times, yeah. Or if I get deked, it looks bad on me. So I take a lot of pride in that, because you're the last step between a caller getting on the air and you talking to them. So I like doing it. I also love getting to know the clones, finding out what they're about, seeing who is going to be good and reliable when we're on a certain topic. The only thing that sucks about screening calls is when we're on a serious topic like national anthem protests. That's been terrible. Ever since that happened, screening calls during that is the worst, because
why?
For every good take on it, there's 75 terrible, terrible takes, and none of them are short-winded. It's always the longest-winded take. And it's not that I don't care, but we don't have time to care. And people got to be short, and they got to be succinct, and they got to get to it. And that was a...
So then, is that your advice? What is your advice? If somebody wants to be a caller on this show, and again, just because you get through does not mean you get on. In fact, most people don't get on.
Right.
We don't take very many calls. I'm trying to screen out only the best. What's your advice for somebody who wants to get on and then be good once they are on?
The first thing you got to do is take it off a speaker and take it off of Bluetooth. Like, that's my biggest pet peeve. I know people are in their cars when they're listening, and when they call in, they're on Bluetooth and speakerphone. But that is an egregious, pompous, entitled thing to call a radio show on speakerphone. Like, I hate that, because what do you think we're going to do? Put you on? You sound like you're in a submarine. You're going on to talk to 200 radio stations. You sound like shit. And you're going to talk to Jim Rome, and you can't even take it off speakerphone. So first, take it off speakerphone, take it off Bluetooth. Second, know what you're going to say and just get to it. It's not that hard. I understand it's scary. And honestly, I think because it's scary, that's what makes it so much fun. If it was easy and you could call and you could ramble on and you could do whatever and you're not going to get LT right to the face, then everyone's going to call. So it takes balls to call this show, which is why it's fun. Just know what you want to say. Try it out. As soon as you do it once, you'll find out it's not that hard, and you'll get better and better as you do it.
All right. So it seems to me, and I want to give you some credit here, it seems to me you take this job very seriously, don't you?
Yes,
I do. Then why aren't you much better at it?
So I have this.
Why do you keep walking into this shit, Sparrow?
I have like this aloof personality where, you know, I come off really dumb and stupid, and I get that. Like, I'm the butt of a lot of jokes. I run 10Ks really slow. I like Hot Pockets. I like cats. I chose water over Top Shelf whiskey. All very stupid stuff.
Go back to that for a minute. Was that your worst day in the jungle?
Yes, hands down. Because looking back on that, when you offered that drink, I'm sitting with you and I'm sitting with Craig. That's a room a lot of people...
Craig Kitchen is my manager, but much more than that, an absolute icon of this industry. I mean, one of the all-time most respected, beloved, pedigreed broadcast professionals, literally in the history of the profession.
Right.
You, he, and I are on the road doing business. We finish our day. We go to a bar, and Craig's not a big drinker. He rarely drinks. He and I have been together 25 years. We've probably done the thing that we did, the three of us. He and I have probably done maybe, I don't know, Hawk, maybe 50, 75 times, maybe at the most, over the past 25 years. Yet there you were, new guy on the job with a chance to crush the finest liquor that bar had. And what did you order? What did I do? I don't even know. I probably went Sapphire, maybe Hendrix. Craig went Martini, and you ordered?
Not just water, but tap water.
Idiot.
From the bartender.
Why did
gun.
You do that?
Yeah, because I was in the middle of this dryuary challenge, and I just in dryuary is where you don't drink in the month of January. It's stupid, and that's a room that people would kill to be in. Craig Kitchen is known as the god of radio in our circles. You are who you are. The people that hit me up on LinkedIn would kill to be in that room. And, you know, you threw down the plastic, you said whatever you want, and I chose the tap water. I regret that because dryuary is all about thinning out, and I put all the weight back on. So it was just so stupid. It was a bad mistake. And it was one in which I told all my guys about it, and I thought, oh, wow, you're really disciplined. Like, you really stuck to it. Good job.
Rome probably really respected that. Yeah. No, Rome thought that was moronic.
Yeah, yeah. And every one of the guys I was doing the dryuary with and my wife thought it was the dumbest thing I'd ever done.
Your wife piled on.
Yeah, she killed me. And
your wife didn't say, good job. No. Good job. Good job. Way to go.
Nope. She said, hey, you've been on the job for 3 months. Jim Rome offered you top shelf whiskey. You're with Craig Kitchen. You said no. You should have just flown home that night.
Right.
You stupid idiot.
As usually, she's right. All right. Listen, first of all kidding aside, all fun aside, you're doing a hell of a job. This is not an easy job, and you're doing a hell of a job.
Thank you.
Let's end this thing on a positive note, upbeat. What was your best day in the jungle for the past year?
Sure. So, smack off July 28th, 2017, just to have heard that on the radio for 7 years, and then to sit on that side of the glass and watch it go down. The stakes are so high. I'm screening the phone calls. I'm talking to these guys that are going on for a chance to become legends, to win $5,000. Some people don't know this about me, but I used to work for JT the Brick, who won the very first Smack Off. Now I'm working for you. Like, it just means so much. And especially as like a radio nerd, I tell this to people all the time. This is a bit that's been going on for 23 years. Like, there aren't people that have bits that go on for 5 years. That is insane. And if you were to try to replicate this today and say, I want callers coast to coast to talk shit to each other to the point where they'll call a radio show and do it, like, they will talk shit to strangers for money and just for fun and to become legends, like, no one could do that today. No one. So to watch that, to be a part of it, to screen that, absolutely incredible. And then a close second would be Romageddon, because we saw what the clones were capable of. They took a podcast all the way to number one. They were paid off in a way that I had no idea they would like so much. To watch that thing go off on Twitter, to watch the podcast go to number one, to hear people call that the best show of all time. These are fun moments, because in radio, you want to do something that people listen to. You want to do something that people love, and people listen to you and they love you and they love those shows. And it was really fun to be a part of it.
There you go. I was going to say, Hawk, take your own advice, be more concise, tighten it up, but you did it. So we let you inside the curtain. Now, for those of you listening who do know the radio program, what do you think now that we've let you inside and you've heard Hawk? Now that you know the way his mind works, the way his process goes, do you think more of him, or was it a mistake for him to sit down with me, and do you now think less of him? Tweet at him and tweet at me. Adam, for the record, you are doing a very good job. Thanks for sitting down.
Thanks for having me, and appreciate it.
There it is. Somehow, some way, we're now 15 episodes deep already. I hope you enjoyed this one, and if you're looking for even more free premium content, go drop a needle on any of the other 14. I'm still getting a ton of reaction from the last two, Brian Fogel and Michael Franzese, back-to-back off-the-board guests that still have people talking and tweeting and emailing, so double back and catch those if you haven't already. And really quickly, before I dip out of here, I did get a phone call on Monday from somebody who had just found the daily radio program, which is amazing to me. After doing this thing for 30 years, I kind of assumed that you've heard it by now, or maybe sports radio just isn't your deal and never will be. But it did fire me up to hear from somebody who got to something that I've been doing since the 90s, and it makes me want to get more new ears to the radio program. So if for some reason you arrived at this podcast with no knowledge of the jungle, go check it out. Every single weekday, noon to 3 Eastern on CBS Sports Radio, or streaming live on jimrome.com. If you want to find your local affiliate, I've got all that info on my website. And if our live hours don't work for you, catch the very best moments of the show on my other podcast, The Daily Jungle, yours for free through iTunes. And remember, the biggest news of all, we are taking The Jungle to TV starting Tuesday, January 2nd on CBS Sports Network. Make sure you're ready for that. Thanks again for all the support. And remember, the conversation never stops. Hit me up on Twitter at Jim Rome. Check out the other podcast episodes. Subscribe to The Daily Jungle and call my personal voicemail, 949-385-0447. I have got content for days, and it's all free. Look for episode 16. It drops next Tuesday, December 5th. Until then, thanks for everything, and I am out.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.